Hi everyone, welcome to episode 116 of Bucks UK TV. Mariana, Tim and Gary and myself are here. We're going to tell you all about the Colts game, how it went down, how it could have gone down, how it should have gone down. Tim, let's start with you. We're probably glass half empty today, aren't we?
Very much so, yeah. The first two words I wrote down here was very disappointing. I was sat there, and throughout the whole game, you just couldn't see any motivation, A, from me on the sofa to get excited about the game, and B, more importantly, from the players and the coaching staff on the team. I thought it looked extremely flat for the 3 hours of the game.
Mariana, kind of what do you mean? We'll stick to general thoughts for now, and we'll come back to the other side of the ball. But kind of as a team, what kind of do you think what was missing?
I kind of tend to agree with Tim. I think we were a bit flat. It just felt like we were outcoached. It just feels like if we get behind, we're not going to come back. If we score first, if we can stay ahead, we have a chance. But if we get behind, our performances just don't seem to be enough. The heads drop, and our performances just don't seem to be enough to get us back and sort of come back from that score or so down. We did seem to keep fighting back, but just didn't have the sort of wherewithal to just get over the line and get a win out of it.
So, Gary, obviously we only scored 20, we conceded 27. That's not a winning formula. Let's start, I think, with the defensive side of the ball, because I think probably, although you could say there's disappointment both sides, just judging from the comments on the forum for the Bucks UK people, I guess there were people moaning about Devin White, people moaning about tackling, people moaning about wide open receivers. We know you have strong views on this. Try and keep it PG-13 or whatever it is in America. The defense overall, kind of what was wrong? What needs to happen next?
They need to sign Winfield to a long-term extension, sign Lavonte for next year, and get rid of everybody else. I mean, it was woeful again, wasn't it? The thing that really annoys me or frustrates me, I mean, Tim used the expression very disappointing. For me, it's frustration that we constantly see the same mistakes over and over and over again. You know, wide receivers, well, wide receivers, wide open. You know, missing tackles. That tackle that Devin White missed on Gardner Minshew's touchdown run. I mean, a half fit Devin White should kill him, and Gardner Minshew made him look an idiot, quite frankly. So it's just frustration. And probably even more frustrating, the coaches don't seem to know how to fix it.
Yeah. Mariana, I have to give you first right of reply when anyone insults your beloved Devin White. Justified or just a bad day at the office?
You know what? It's the thing that we've said before about Devin White, which is when Lavonte is playing, Devin White looks better. No Lavonte, Devin just looks half the player that he can be, and he got shown up. We didn't have Lavonte. We had Sabosha Dennison instead, and Devin White didn't stand up to be the leader of the team that he should be at that point. So I think that's where we're at with Devin. He just, for whatever reason, he can't step up that level if he's not got Lavonte there to sort of keep his game higher.
And Tim,
Absolutely agree.
trying to come glass half full. I think Kalijah Kancey for me seemed like he was a bit of a bright spot. We were all hoping that Diaby was going to do some crazy things. There were some breakout moments. Even JTS managed to get on the stat sheet.
Yeah, he managed to get on the stat sheet. It reminded me of when Michael Strahan got the sack record and so on, as Brett Favre fell down. It did remind me of that very quickly. But I know we got a fan of his on the cast tonight. So we've had discussions on JTS outside of this forum. I've got to agree with Mariana, though. Devin White, Gary will know this especially. I've been a massive Devin White fan since his days back at LSU. And Mariana took my words. I said, he looked lost. And it's a worry now. If this guy thinks he's a $15, $20 million a year linebacker, top paid in the league, I'm afraid if that's what he wants, he's going to have to go somewhere else to get it. Because I can't see any way we can justify paying him when we got so many other issues around defensive back and so on that need to be fixed beforehand on offensive line. You know, our three leading tacklers yesterday were defensive backs. That's not a good sign. That, you know, there's a lot of penetration into our backfield there. And, you know, those guys, yeah, they tackle well, but they're tackling people 10, 15 yards downfield.
I think that's a really interesting point because the Colts had 394 yards, 239 through the air, and 155 on the ground. Again, in days past, you know, we sort of said how good the Bucs were against the run. Some people joking again on the forum that actually you don't need it. The reason we were so good on the run is because you could just pass on us instead. But actually, it felt, I mean, all three touchdowns came on the ground, didn't they, Gary? So kind of it feels like the run game just kind of went a little bit AWOL, didn't it? The run defense, at least.
Run defense definitely did. Jonathan Taylor had a bit of a fit. In fact, they both did, Zach Moss and Jonathan Taylor. And the thing for me was that Taylor ran right through the heart of the defense, and we didn't lay a finger on him any number of times. You know, the touchdown, I can't remember which one, but he carried three or four tacklers over the line with him. I mean, the run defense has just disappeared. I mean, we've never had a pass defense, but the run defense just disappeared in that game. And to emphasize Tim's point about the defensive backs making all the tackles, look at Winfield the week before. He had 16, the most the defensive backs ever had for the Buccaneers. So, you know, it's ongoing problems, the same problems, and they don't seem to know how to or want to fix them.
So I guess that leads us on to the coaching side of the defense then, Mariana. And I come to all of you. You know, is it a knee-jerk reaction to say that, you know, we're looking for change? Well, you know, next week, the next episode, we'll start talking about the Panthers. But clearly they've made a business decision about at what point in the season they need to make change. And we know the Glazers don't really like doing that. There's no evidence of them ever really chopping anyone mid-year. You know, is this only solvable by handing out P45s?
I mean, there definitely seems to be an issue with the coaching. We've got talent in that defense, and we're not really using it to its potential. I think you pointed out last week, you know, maybe we should try some stunts, maybe we should try something to get to the quarterback, for instance. And the one sack, and I'll still keep defending JTS, but the one sack that JTS got was based off of, you know, he's coming around
all the way around, really slow developing play, but it worked.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was like a well-coached move, and it was something a bit different than just trying to sort of get through the guys in the middle. Let's do something different to get round the O-line and get to the quarterback. I mean, it really showed in the stats, in the D stats. We got something like two sacks and about three quarterback hits, and they got six against Baker and nine QB hits. You know, that's the difference, and that is coming from coaching. It has to be coming from coaching, I think, the fact that our D has fallen off so far. I don't want to point the finger, but there's only one direction that you can point it at, and is head coach just too much for Todd Bowles? But I think we all know that if a coaching change is made, it's not going to be, well, Todd, can you step back down to D coordinator where you did quite well? It will be start again and have to rebuild. And at this point, I think we might as well wait until the off-season. I don't see who are we going to get in now and start that rebuilding process unless there's someone. I just don't see it. I think just wait till the off-season, wait till all the moves and do something then.
Now, Gary, you know, kind of, we're all of us on this call are unfortunately old enough, some of us ugly enough, to remember the Raheem Morris years. And there's that final year for Raheem Morris where we actually started relatively strong, sound familiar, and then just down the avenue, I can't remember, was it 10 games or something we slumped to? And it's some of the results were some of them sort of most embarrassing, you know, lopsided results I can remember watching as a Bucks fan, and there are a lot out there. You know, and a lot was said about actually, you know, the players had quit on the coach. Now, you know, you Mariana, said you have to point to coaching. I kind of, to play devil's advocate, all these players have been playing, you know, sports to a high standard, if not football, since the age of 6 or 7, you know, some other basketball. They all know how to be professionals. They're all paid a lot of money. Arguably, they shouldn't even need coaching. But kind of, you know, do you think the players have quit on the coach? Is that, and is that as damning as it sounds?
I don't think they've done that. They certainly did it on Raheem Morris. It was quite widely reported at the time. But no, I think they actually quite like Todd Bowles. I wish I could put my finger on what's going wrong. But, you know, it's not just Raheem Morris. I mean, I go back as far as Lehman Bennett, for goodness sake. And, you know, Richard Williamson and all those sort of people. It's been a trademark of the Buccaneers, you know, since I've been supporting the team. But I agree completely with Mariana in that if they've never sacked, the Glazers have never sacked a coach in season. Mm. So if he survives this season, you know, if he's going to go, it'll be at the end of the season. And as I say, I agree with Mariana, if they did get rid, now who do you put in place and would that make any difference? The only thing you can say it would do is give them a bit of a leg up on hiring a new candidate because they're all clearly already thinking of it.
Yeah, yeah. And we
tend to go down to hiring the same type of coach. You know, Gary named quite a few players, quite a few coaches there. They're all of the same disposition, very quietly spoken and so on. The only one I can, you know, I can name in the last 25 years is obviously John Gruden, who got in the face of people. Now, one of my favourite coaches out there at the moment is Dan Campbell. Now, look how he is coaching that Lions team. It is all aggression. They're all in each other. They are motivating each other. You walk to our sidelines, you just see people with basically hands in their pockets wandering around. And there is nobody, you know, Mayfield had to come out overnight and call out his teammates. We need to do something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of his job as being a team leader and so on. But where are the coaches? You know, listening to Todd Bowles, and only a better chance to hear, it's not snowballing out yet. Mm-hmm. Really? Mm-hmm. 6 or 7 defeats?
Yeah,
it's not getting out of control.
It feels like a big slump, but I guess if that's your job, what else are you going to say? I guess coming back to the quiet character, my mind immediately jumps to Tony Dungy, you know, as a quiet coach, perhaps that maybe did get the job done, but maybe that's the exception rather than the rule. I guess the challenge is that we, you know, after getting rid of Gruden, we kind of got ourselves into this cycle. Hire someone, fantastic hire, 2-3 years down the line, fire someone, terrible hire, and you rinse and repeat, and it becomes a toxic job that no one wants because you know you're going to be on the hot plate as soon as you walk in the door. I guess you could argue potentially there's lower expectations, but I kind of, you know, because Marion said, you know, are we in a rebuild? That's the problem, isn't it? Because if we're going to keep Winfield, David and jettison everyone else, jettison the coaches, are we into a rebuild?
I think we are. We've got to be at the position we are in. And with a new coach, would the new coach want his own quarterback?
Mm. Well, that's a good chance to segue into the offense, isn't it, I think? Because you've also got a decision about what you do about the line and do you pay Mike Evans? So let's come into the offensive side of the game. Again, Mayfield, I thought, had quite a good game. Clearly injured Mariana. I mean, I think that injury affected him for most of the game.
Yeah, I think someone sort of ironically said, "Oh, the painkilling injection at half time looked to have done the trick," and he did seem to be a bit looser after half time. We'll just say that he walked it off a bit. he did look to be playing a little bit better. It was a bit of a heart in mouth situation when he went down injured. I'm glad to see him back. I was on the Kyle Trask hype train before the start of the season. I have definitely come around to Baker. And that's again, as you say, where I feel like a new coach would most probably want their own quarterback, and I actually think Baker Mayfield's doing an all right job for us. And he was hitting the receivers, but again, and I said this in the episode beforehand, I said we need to convert on third down, and we had, you know, third and four right by the goal line, and that could have been a critical, you know, really nice start to the game, get those 7 points on the board, and it turns into a field goal. So I think that's where I'm struggling. He's not getting those crucial third down conversions.
And
so are we already at the Baker Mayfield ceiling? This is as good as we're going to get out of him? And is he then the person to take us over? I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan. I've been converted to him this year. I think he has been a really good sign-in and the type of quarterback we need. We just need some other players around him with his attitude. I think we're too nice. You know, I'll say everything from Mike Evans. What's a real bad word against your player-wise and so on. But after the game, he was having his photo taken smiling with one of the opposition players. Now I'd be in that dressing room pissed off. Pardon my language.
I mean, that was the knock on Gerald McCoy, though, wasn't it? Not nasty enough, not aggressive enough. In the whole McCoy versus Sue debate. Yeah.
We're in a fight at the moment, a fight to get wins.
Baker Mayfield's, I can't remember the exact wording, but his quote after the game, wasn't it? It was about trying to find people that were similarly motivated to try and improve and fix things next week.
It's what we need. Mm. We need a difference in attitude.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield is not the problem on this team. There's so many other problems on offense, defense. Baker Mayfield is not one of them. The problem that the Bucs have now is, you know, we're going to be middle of the pack in terms of where we draft. So is Baker Mayfield the future? Is he going to get you over the hump and get you to a Super Bowl? Or, you know, are we going to be in the Caleb Williams, Drake May sweepstakes from our draft position? Probably not. So they're in a bit of a difficult situation.
So I've seen at least two social media outlets and, in fact, one this side of the pond as well, calling for Mr. Trask to be at the helm, just because we need to see what we've got in Kyle Trask. I mean, it's a very small sample size. He came in one play. It was a completion, but it was out of bounds. It looked like a really nice pass, though. And to have the confidence, actually, you know, we're saying that the team don't have the confidence in Trask. That's why they got Baker in. But actually, he came out on the field. They didn't hand it off. They didn't dump it off. They let him fire into the back corner of the end zone, Marianne. And I thought he looked quite sharp. It's, again, a really small sample size.
Yeah, we've just not seen enough out of him. And the fact that they, you know, they went with Baker, they've definitely got more confidence in what Baker can do with that team. I think they're holding on to Trask as a very, very competent backup. Mm. A little bit like we held on to Griffin.
Gabbert.
Gabbert, thank you. Yeah. You know, he's there. I'm sure he could step in and have a decent game. But I think a little bit like Tim's just said, where's his ceiling? And maybe that's the issue. Maybe we've got two very sort of, we've probably got an above average with Baker and an average with Trask, and they've not got the ceiling to go above. As Gary says, I don't think we're going to be in the hunt for a Caleb Williams. I don't know how deep that QB class is. I don't think I would still stick with Baker for at least another season personally, just based on what he's done for us so far. And I would look at fixing other pieces on the team that are more crucial to my mind, and roll with Baker for another season. Personally, as you say, I don't think he does that much wrong, and there's bigger problems. And the one thing I did really like out of yesterday's game, one pass, was the Payne Durham one that he picked off the Colts player's head. There's a player that is going to have that attitude, that's going to have that fight in him, I think. Payne Durham's that sort of player that picks the ball up and really tries to go for it. It'd just be nice to see him a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, in the tight ends, stable seems to have been fairly congested, and it hasn't been a great opportunity for him to come out. Let's just move briefly to the running game then, because I guess the other question is Rashad White the person? Now, again, 15 carries, 100 yards, 6.7 yards a carry, looked fairly respectful yesterday, didn't it, Gary?
I think he finally remembered he was a running back and not a slot receiver. Yeah, I thought he had a cracking game. You know, every time I've been on here, I've been calling for, we need a decent run, you know, a 20 or 30, 40 yarder. And we finally got one. You know, break one of them every game. He had several sort of 8, 9, 10 yards as well. So he had a really good game. Yeah, I think he's coming on. That said, you know, if we had a big bruising, you know, Michael Stott, Derek Henry type to complement him, then that'd be absolutely awesome. But at the moment, we haven't got that. But so they roll with White till the end of the year. He's, you know, perfectly adequate.
But the players we haven't mentioned in that is that O-line then to give him that space to block between the tackles, to run between the tackles. Mm-hmm. I agree. That's the first time I wrote White best rushing day between tackles. And that's the first time we really seen it. So that offensive line had a good day going forward, but a poor day going backwards in pass protection. It's as we said earlier, if one thing goes well, another thing fails. And they've been the opposite way round for most of the season.
Yeah, it's
the
hard,
problem with the O-line yesterday, though, was Wirfs is obviously clearly banged up. And because Mayfield is also did his ankle and therefore wasn't anything like as mobile as usual, put those two together, the net result is 6 sacks.
I think it's a good point to talk about the line again, because my sort of read of it was the difference in our running game, I think, was actually the running backs, not the line. Rashad White seems to want to pick a hole or is designated a hole and just goes for it. But with Taylor and with a lesser extent Moss, you saw them adjusting and shuffling and sidestepping at the line when things weren't quite opening up how they wanted it to open up, but without losing pace. So obviously, when I see Rashad White sort of stopping and stuttering, he either doesn't hit the line at speed or he just hits the line at speed but runs, dare I say it, into a brick wall. That kind of, and that I don't think I blame the line necessarily for that, although you could argue they're not opening the gaps up. I don't think we've got anything in Tucker. I don't think we've got anything in Vaughan. So I think that part of the roster's pretty much opened up. But I guess in terms of the line, I think we've, like I say, Wirfs is banged up. I'm sure we give him a pass. He's by far the best lineman we've got. Which other people on the line do you think might, you know, I mean, you can't change the whole roster in one off season. So some of those people will have to remain. Some of them will still be under contract. I mean, Hainsey, for example, I'm quite happy with Hainsey's blocking, dare I say it. But again, it's something else that others have picked up that once they've said it, I've noticed it. There's the number of low snaps. Mm. I mean, Tim, it's all very well asking Baker to do magic things, but he's got his eyes down at his feet.
Yeah, but he wasn't a college center. He's been turned into it. He was a guard. He was a guard at Notre Dame. So he's been, and this is sometimes the problems you get. Ali Marpet had 1 year at center. Was he great? He was okay, but what did they do straight away? They shifted him back to guard where he was the best we had. And that's one of the things you've got to look at. But then you're not going to spend a first, second round pick on a centre out there this year. So, you know, it's where that lineman is going to actually come from. You know, reading all the drafts, there's one lineman from Penn State who's worth picking in the first 15 picks. And that's really all that's there. So, is this going to be the best we've got? Is it a big free agent out there that we can't afford?
Yeah, you can't really blame Hainsey too much because, as Tim says, he did get kind of dumped into that. And we were expecting Jensen to be back.
Yeah.
I think everyone thought Jensen was going to be back. We were going to have that great centre. And then all of a sudden, just before the season starts, it's like, oh, no, it'll be Hainsey. Jensen's out. And as we've said before, Jensen's probably, you know, it looks like he may well be done on his career. So you can't blame Hainsey so much for converting. As you say, his blocking's good, but...
Yeah, the sign to me that the O-line's having a good game is if you don't hear the commentators call their name. So yeah. Gudecki, you didn't hear his name mentioned, I don't think. No. Cody Mock, you didn't. Aaron Stinney, you certainly did on his couple of penalties, and worse, obviously, because he was banged up. Kieran, you did, right. There are a couple of slightly dodgy snaps, but there was nothing outrageous. So, you know, he's a workmanlike centre, pressed into it, doing a decent job. I mean, on the whole, yesterday, the O-line weren't bad, other than Worf's being banged up and you know, they knew it and they played on it.
Yeah, I guess what you want is you want a coach that's going to play to our strengths. So the frustrating thing for me, and I'm sure for others, is, you know, I hate these coaches that have a system. Look at the players you've got, play to the players' strengths. Clearly our O-line is better in pass blocking than run blocking. So why are we running it up the gut all the time? That's the biggest enigma of them all, isn't it? It's that first down, run up the gut to begin the game, nothing sooner, you know, followed by an incomplete pass on second down, third down long, maybe a bit of a swing pass and 2 yards, and then we're punting. And that's our opening drive.
And as you say, no change of pace back. Yeah. So we've got Rashad White at the moment. Mm. We're not even seeing, did we even see Kashawn Vaughan come on? Or I think
we had Chase Edmonds had a bit of a wing, you know, one carry for 11 yards.
Yeah.
Vaughan was in
a bit of a, yeah.
Yeah. And, so yeah, Rashad
clearly
White
Vaughan,
or Rashad
Vaughan
White.
Doesn't put his uniform on anymore. And when you've only got three running backs on the roster, that's really telling, isn't it?
Mm. So that, I think that's one area that we're definitely looking to change in, obviously, the end of the season, whether it be through draft. And I don't believe in, I'm a bit of an anti drafting a running back too high because they just get injured. So I'm a little bit anti first round running backs. But then again, is that maybe somewhere we need to go and just invest in one? We've not really had a first round for sort of running back for a while. We tend to sort of skip that. And maybe that is somewhere that we could look at and have a player that can do the sort of things that we're saying Jonathan Taylor can, or that a Barkley can, or that, you know, Derek Henry can.
Well, it feels like we're already looking towards the future. Let's go slightly less further into the future. Yes, I'm going to keep this as a one episode because it feels like we've already bridged the gap between last week and next week. So let's move on to look at the Panthers. Now, this is a 1-10 team. And at the beginning of the year, this was an easy rollover. However, just in time for the recording, poor Frank Reich, who anyone who remembers him as a Buffalo Bills quarterback against the Oilers will have a soft spot for him, but clearly not in Carolina these days. He's out the door. Juice Staley's out the door. Josh McCown's out the door. They've made that decision. And now we've got a very dangerous 1-10 team playing for their roster spots. So, I mean, Gary, we'll start with you. How worried do we have to be for the Carolina Panthers, given the Bucks' form?
Well, when I read earlier on this afternoon that they'd sacked him, it was my first thought. You know, over here in our soccer football, you know, the team, you always get a bounce when they sack the manager. I don't know why it happens. I don't know how it happens, but it always seems to happen. And, you know, I've got a really bad feeling now about this game. You know, this is also the ultimate banana skin now, I think, for us. Fortunately, it's at Raymond James, although that's been nothing like the fortress it should be. But they are quite a dangerous, wounded team now, I think. And, of course, whoever they've appointed as interim coach is going to be really trying to make his mark, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Like I say, that's at Raymond James. It's been flexed to the late kick of 9 o'clock for us, 4 p.m. stateside. Clearly, this is the game that America wants to see, Mariana. What do you think they're going to be watching?
Bryce Young. We have a tendency to make rookie QBs look amazing. So let's hope that we can actually not do that. But if we defend as deep as we have been and stand off their receivers, they're going to have a day, and Bryce Young might have one of his best days yet. We've got to press more. We have to. We can't give Bryce Young time. He's struggled as a new young QB, but I know from having watched him in college, he's got the talent, and if we give him time, he's going to tear us apart, I feel like. So yeah, let's not do that. But as you say, it's going to be this team with a point to prove, and it does have me worried now. How are we going to turn out for it?
Yeah, he's got the talent, but he hasn't got the talent around him. It's quite a poor roster when you look at Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard as the lead backs. Adam Thielen must be about 54 by now, I would have thought, as the only receiver they've got in that team. Apologies to Adam Thielen. He is very, very good. But he's a one-man band in that team. You know, this is a poor, poor offensive team and not particularly brilliant if you look outside Brian Burns defensively either. So even though it's a banana skin of a game, I'll go back on everything I've just said. We should have the talent to beat them.
we wouldn't be Bucks fans if we didn't think each week we were going to bounce back. That's what it's all about.
But as the guys have alluded to, it's all about attitude now.
But you can hear that we're all now a little bit nervous about a game. Yeah, that we should have gone into feeling quite positive and thinking, well, they're not a very good team, and we're going to go in and beat them easily. And now, having lost so many of the last, you know, six of the last seven, we're all a little bit nervous about how we're going into a game against what is essentially a very bad Panthers team.
And I think you're right. And I think obviously the gut feeling, if you're worried about your job, you're worried about your paycheck, you're worried about where your next meal ticket, you're paying the mortgage, you're feeding the family, that's going to make you clench. And that's not going to be your best. So I think the question is, has Todd Bowles got it within him to loosen this team up? He just doesn't seem to be that sort of humane sort of person that plays the psychology of it. He seems to be all about the X's and the O's and not about the stuff in between the ears. That's my worry. I think for me, thinking back, this is this reminds me about of the sort of three quarters of the year through the season after the last Super Bowl. So Brady, you know, we started off strong coming out the gate. There was a little bit of a blip, and the way that we got over that blip was just by unlocking everything. You know, that's the point of the season where players looked like they were having the most fun. You know, and like, you know, Brady having fun, and that was infectious to the other players. So I know it doesn't feel like, a bit like you were saying, sort of whoever it was, sort of saying, you know, Mike Evans posing for photos afterwards. But actually, I think now it's kind of, we've got nothing to lose at this point. So let's just go out and have some fun. Let's do some of the stuff that we've always done in practice that we're maybe a bit scared to bring it out. Let's open the playbook up, assuming the playbook has that many pages in it. Gary, I mean, in terms of, so we talked a bit about the offense and how we score on, how we try and prevent a fairly low-powered Panthers offense. In terms of then our offense, I know you're going to say trick plays, but what sort of trick plays? What if we're going to have fun? What do we want to do against this Panthers team?
I think you've just hit the nail on the head. Open the playbook. The last couple of weeks, you know, I've been watching the team, and I've been asking myself the question, I wonder if Dave Canales had free rein to run the offense exactly as he wanted and not in this conservative run the ball way that Todd Bowles seems to go. I wonder exactly how good this offense would be. You know, the word I've always used on here is creativity. I mean, look at that play that the Colts, the fourth down that Mo Alie-Cox caught. You know, he over the top of the line, and there wasn't a Buck player anywhere in the same postcode when he caught it. You know, creativity. The Christian McCaffrey touchdown catch the week before. You know, a creative play. That's what we need. I'd love to see flea flickers and trick plays and end arounds and all the rest of it. I just want to see 11 players out there who want to win and a play caller who's going to, you know, put them in the position to win.
And opening the playbook up doesn't mean everything has to be a flea flicker, everything has to be a Hail Mary deep ball. You know, I still think we haven't explored what the outside run game for the Bucks actually looks like. I still don't think about what we've seen about trying to overload particular sides. We have this thing, we all used to have this thing, didn't we, under the last scheme where we'd stack three receivers one side, Mike Evans the other side, and see what came of that. We don't seem to be running that rule. We only seem to run that now when we're going to do like the rocket screen and, you know, the wide receiver gets tackled for a 2-yard gain. So I guess magic wand moment, kind of, if you're going to focus on training this week, Mariana. We'll do one magic wand moment, and then we'll do a score prediction. So, what's the one thing you've got to fix this week?
The secondary. Yeah. I know it's quite a big wand, but let's have the secondary fixed. Well, defense in general. We need to definitely get more pressure on the QB. I think we've got to see better stats than what we've seen.
Yeah, that's undoubtedly my magic wand. I think if you think about, you know, obviously Lavonte David will be back to hold the midline. We know Devin White's best blitzing. So you're going to send Devin, you're going to send JTS. Where's Shaq been? You know, kind of, you know, that's probably one player that maybe we won't be seeing in a Bucs uniform next year, it feels like. Clearly, he's got lots of extracurricular stuff going on, and we completely cut him as much slack as anyone could humanly give. But it's on the field is where we're talking at the moment. So yeah, for me it's about the pressure. Tim, your magic wand?
It was the same. It's all pressure. Yeah. They're a one man team at the moment on offense of that quarterback, and the way to get in his face, the guy's only about 5'9", 5'10" tall. Get in his face. So JTS, come on, boy.
Or at least see if we can get those tips at the line that are happening to us. Yeah, Gary, yeah. Your magic wand moment.
I think I can agree with Tim and Mariana, but for me, my magic wand is going to make Tristan Wirfs' ankle 100% again. It will make Levante's groin feel 100% better. And it will make Jamel Dean's injury, which they've only just released it, breaking news. He's actually got a very acute case of embarrassment. Hopefully he will be back. So for me, it's injuries. Injuries are killing us, and we're not, you know, we haven't really talked about injuries. Mm. Coaching staff never talk about injuries. It's about the guys on the field. But when your best players are banged up and the other team know it and take advantage of that, then, you know, you've had it.
Yeah, it's so hard. Injuries. You could be saying, why aren't we taking advantage of other people's injuries? Because it doesn't feel
because
like we are.
Because our coaching staff are not good. Hmm. As simple as that.
Okay, scores on the doors, prediction time. Tim, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I am going to predict a win. And actually, I'm going to predict a fairly comfortable 24-13, 24-10 type of game.
Nice. With maybe some garbage time then for the Panthers, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. We'd like that, Gary.
Well, I'm also going to predict a win. I mean, surely to goodness, they've got to either come back in the fourth quarter to win it or hold a lead, which they haven't been able to do. We can't score points. They can't score points. But they're not very good, let's be honest. So I've got written down here 24-20.
Oh, that's still quite a lot of points. Okay, win for the Bucks. Mariana, don't be that lone wolf. I'm going to go win. I will spoiler.
No, I'm going to go win. I've got to. But I'm not as confident in this being a classic game of scores. So I'm going to say that we somehow just cancel each other out. It's not a great game to watch, and it's something like 14-3.
Oh, that's really close. So I've also got a win. I've got 13-10. And I think it's 13-3 going into the fourth quarter, and the Panthers managed to get down the field because we'll be playing that prevent 20 where everyone's lining back on the end zone, and we just see what we can let the team move in 10 seconds down the whole field. So I think we will be the least worst team on the day. That's the best credit I think I can give us.
And another couple of steps down the draft order to get Caleb Williams.
Yeah. But do you know what? I've never believed in tanking, even though... we always go out to win, and for the fans and for your own professional self-respect. And I think we'll see that. I don't think the players have quit, like you said. Cool. Well, apologies for those two episode aficionados. As you could see, it all kind of morphed into one. I think you'll forgive us. It means we'll get the episodes back to even numbers and when we're here next week. Tim, Mariana, Gary, thank you. We'll all be staying up a little bit later than we probably had planned to watch it on Sunday. Hopefully, you'll be joining us on the forum or online. But until next time, thank you and go Bucks!
Go Bucks!